Welcome to City Club of Eugene's September 7th program, Are You Safe Downtown? A community conversation with Eugene Police Department Chief Chris Skinner and Eugene Chamber of Commerce CEO Brittany Quick Warner. This is the first program of the 2018-2019 programming year. I'm Joel Corin, President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club here today this afternoon or at cityclubofeugene.org. We have our sponsors today. Our diamond sponsor is Kaiser Permanente, that exists to provide high quality, affordable health care services and improve the health care of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Our Sapphire sponsors are Johnson Johnson, Lucas & Middleton, PC, a law firm with the mission to obtain justice and fair compensation for people who have been harmed because of someone else's conduct. I will mention other sponsors later in the program. About a year and a half ago, my wife and I were going to the movies downtown to the Metro. We parked at the Parkade building, and we're on 8th Street, walking toward the parking lot behind the bank to go through the alley to go into the Metro. As we walked along 8th Street, a young woman approached us and took a swing that missed my wife by only a couple inches. We continued, went on to the movie. We continue to go downtown, but a lot of people would not go downtown after an incident like that. So in my discussions with people over the summer, when talking to folks in the business and tech communities and just many other people, one of their main concerns is safety downtown. So we had this program to talk about the issues relating to safety downtown. Our speakers are Brittany Quick Warner, who became president of the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce last year after a period of serving as interim director and prior to that, director of business advocacy for 4 years. Chief Chris Skinner became Eugene's police chief on April 30th, 2018. Previously, Chief Skinner served as Richland, Washington's chief of police since 2011 and has 27 years of police and public safety experience. Additional information about their bios can be found in the table flyers. Brittany, you're on.
Thank you, Joel, and thank you, everyone. Like you said, my name is Brittany Quick Warner. I'm the president and CEO of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm glad to be here today to talk about this important issue. I'm going to talk a little bit about why it's so important to the chamber, but I think to the entire community. But to give you guys a little bit of context about myself and about kind of why I might be up here in front of you. Not only am I the CEO of the Eugene Chamber, I lived downtown for a few years when I first moved to this community, and my husband and I own a small business that's located in the heart of downtown at the corner of Broadway and Willamette. We spend a lot of time downtown. I love the downtown in our community. I love the businesses there. I love the people that I see. I love the residents and the neighborhood. But I believe there is so much more that we can and should expect out of the downtown that we have in our community. And I also think it's possible for us to get there. When we were asked to talk about this issue, we were asked to talk about public safety in downtown. But what I think you will quickly learn is that this issue is so much bigger than just downtown. And it's so much more complex than simply asking our police force or our elected officials to handle this situation. I truly believe that this is a community-wide issue that requires a community-wide response if we're really going to get to the place where we want to be. The revitalization of downtown Eugene has been a top priority for the business community for years. Economic data indicates, and our members believe, that the strength and vitality of a community's downtown core is essential to a healthy economy and healthy community members. A city's downtown creates a critical mass of activities where commercial and cultural and civic energies are concentrated. It most often contains the highest number of jobs in the community, the bulk of the wages, the greatest property values, and in turn, taxes that pay for the critical services and the investments that the city has to make in order to serve our entire community. But downtowns are much more than just the profit center for a community. They represent the image and the character of a city to the rest of the world. They are like the living room of your home. Typically, it's the only neighborhood that really belongs and is truly shared by everyone in the community. In today's economy, competition between businesses and other communities for jobs and workforce is fierce. We believe that a safe and vibrant and welcoming downtown not only serves our downtown residents and businesses, but it serves the entire community. We're able to attract and retain the talent that our businesses need in order to be thriving and in order to help support the families that are working in those companies. Our community has gone through many transitions, and we've done a lot to improve the state of our downtown. But 3 years ago, when we had an outcry from downtown businesses and employees about the state of our downtown, we knew that we had more work to do, and we were facing a situation that could not be ignored. What we heard was, despite the progress and investment, downtown still felt unsafe. What we learned as we dug into the issue with research and conversations among our members, among neighbors, and other communities was that this issue was complex and there certainly was not going to be a silver bullet, but just because it was going to be hard, it didn't mean that we could just ignore it any longer. Safety means something different to everyone, and what makes one person feel unsafe is very different than what makes someone else feel unsafe. That is a reality that we learned very quickly, and I think it's one that we have to remember whenever we're talking about these issues, is that your perception, your feelings are true, and they're your own, and so we can't discredit how other people feel when they are downtown. Just because it might not make you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it doesn't make someone else feel unsafe in the place that you're at. I think that's really important for us to remember and to make sure that we're accepting and we're acknowledging what people really are thinking and feeling about downtown when we're talking about these issues. It doesn't mean that those people are wrong either. What it means is that not only one entity or one policy or one solution is going to move the needle, because the problems are as diverse as the community and the people that we see downtown. It's going to take a system-wide approach that addresses the layers of this complex problem, and it's going to take businesses and residents alike coming together to make hard decisions. If it was easy, we would have already done it. These are hard decisions that we have to make, and it's going to take a community who is willing to make a change in order for us to really see this happen. What we need are long-term solutions, not just short-term interventions that we hope to just fix the problem quickly. By investing dollars in temporary actions, what we're doing is diverting the time and attention and the funds away from serving our entire community. We believe that a focus on increased housing downtown, bringing more people down there to live and to really call the center of our community their home, is going to help improve the safety. We also think that a long-term strategy to fill the vacant storefronts with activity that is sustained, with activities that don't require a ton of city services and investment over and over and over again, are going to help bring people downtown, and they're going to do the most good for our community. Our police department has been incredibly receptive to the community concerns about downtown. They have attempted creative solutions. They have made do with what they have to think outside the box. But what we get is diverted attention, reactive solutions when we know we want and need proactive, and police officers who are giving until they have no more to give. We also have community members who don't feel listened to. We have folks who don't feel like what it is we're giving them is actually solving and providing for their needs that they have. This is not just about improving our police force. This is about improving the entire system that serves our community. We have evidence that services and programs that we've invested in over the last several years are working, and they're working outside of just police presence downtown. The community court program, which I assume Chief Skinner will talk about, has evidence that it is working for people, that we are able to take folks out of this circle of crime, and we're able to give them the services and the wraparound support that they need to change their lives in a positive way. Those are the types of programs in partnership with some of these other things. And that alone is not going to solve this problem. We've got to enforce the rules that we have. We have to be a community community that is both compassionate and intolerant of illegal and harassing activity. And I think we can be both of those things. It's going to require a shift in the paradigm to change the culture of our community. We are asking for bold leadership and support from our entire community in making some of these significant transformational and meaningful changes. We cannot put this on the shoulders of our elected officials alone. We cannot put this on the shoulders of our police department alone or our social service providers. We have to figure out how is each of the activities that all of us are doing collectively moving the needle, and which ones aren't working, and we have to abandon those and try and shift and make changes elsewhere. I truly believe that if we come together and we are able to own this place that we call downtown, we're going to not only improve our downtown, we're going to be able to free up resources for our police department to serve the entire community, to come out to your neighborhood in North Eugene or in South Eugene to serve you whenever you have an issue that you feel like you need support from that police department. So we're not just investing in downtown, we're spreading the resources that we desperately need throughout the entire community. And at the same time, we're improving our living room, which is downtown Eugene, which I think desperately deserves our attention and our support. Thank you.
How about another round of applause for the next chief of police, Brittany Quick Warner? You know what? I could just come up here and say, what I wanted to do is come up here and say what she said and just sit down and just let you ask questions, but I don't think Joel's going to let me get away with that. Just yet. So let me say thank you and that I'm very honored to be here today. As you can imagine, since April 30th, it's been a whirlwind of speaking engagements, meeting people, trying to keep names and faces straight as I've immersed myself into this community, both me and my family, with Jackson at 11 and Kendall at 9. You can imagine trying to reacclimate a family and get a full sense of what the need is from a public safety perspective has been a challenge, but it's been one that has been very rewarding so far, and so it's been a lot of fun. Lots of great partners that I've met as we've moved forward in trying to identify what are the unique needs of this community and how do we deliver that service with the available resources that we have, and so we've had a lot of discussion about that. More specifically, when I got here, I was told this tale of our downtown core and how broken it was and how much attention that it needed. And as I came to the city and spent some time in the downtown and met with people, I found it very interesting that, as Brittany had pointed out, that it is just very much a matter of perspective. And that I've met with people who, from their perspective, really enjoy and embrace the eclectic nature of downtown with all of its diverse populations and experiences. And I've had the conversation with others who purposefully avoid downtown because it makes them feel uncomfortable. And to her point, I think it's important that we don't use the feeling of uncomfortableness and safety synonymously. Although sometimes a feeling of being uncomfortable can be a predicate feeling to being unsafe, and we have to pay attention to that. But more times or not, in our lifestyles and in our lives, those two things are a little bit incongruent with respect to how you're feeling. And so when we're having these tough conversations about downtown, there's a lot of different things we talk about. We talk about whether the downtown is safe, and statistically we can look at some things to point in that direction as to whether it is safe or not safe compared to other areas of our city. And just like any city, there are areas that are more safe than others, certainly. There are certain areas of every city that are more safe than others. But by comparison, is the downtown any less safe than anywhere else that we're seeing criminal behavior or types of behavior that makes you feel uncomfortable? And those are the types of things that we look at from a data-led policing perspective and what we need to do. I have conversations with people all the time, and I think I found this more concerning than anything from a public safety perspective and a leadership perspective is this push and pull between the individuals that are downtown and the amount of social services and advocacy that is going on every single day for those individuals that find themselves unhoused, and many in our business community are people that live downtown. And I was at an event not too long ago in the downtown where I met with a lot of community members. And I would have a conversation in 1 minute telling me, Chief, I need you to clean up downtown. What's it going to take to clean up downtown? And in the very next minute, I would have the same conversation with somebody else and says, downtown is fine just the way it is. Please don't enforce and disadvantage those that are already disadvantaged with your unneeded rules and regulations and ordinances. And so that tipping point is really delicate for me, because we have both sides of that that are equally fighting on their from their perspectives on what they think is right. And so I push back on both of those, and I talk to those people that say, clean up downtown, and I say, what does that mean to you to clean up downtown? Is that because you don't like the way it looks, or because you think it's unsafe? And oftentimes I found in those dialogues that sometimes our perceptions of the way downtown looks sometimes translates into a level of safety. Now, I'm not minimizing anybody in this room that has been a victim of a crime, whether it's downtown or in your own neighborhoods or in any other area of the city. I know that is a horrible experience and terribly violating. I don't want to ever be seen as minimizing that. But we just need to have those thoughtful and courageous conversations about understanding that sometimes those emotions bleed into both of those worlds. Conversely, I push back on those that don't want any rules downtown, and I talk a little bit about how a vibrant downtown and that the downtown is the economic engine of this great city that provides all these services, and if but for having a vibrant downtown, a lot of these services may not even exist that people take advantage of. And so we talked about that, and we talked about the importance of that balance and what we want to do. And as a police chief, I'm often pulled in those different directions to try and balance both of those things. And as you can imagine, that can be a very difficult balance depending on who the audience is. And so I share that with you so that you have a window into kind of the types of experiences I've had in the short four and a half, five months that I've been here and the ongoing conversations that we're having. But there is one thing that is true as I analyze my time here, is that we do not have enough resources for the amount of demand that you guys have and that you guys deserve. I'm not just talking about police resources, I'm talking about resources across the gamut of what I would consider a community justice system. We just don't have enough resources. The stories that I hear about people that have been gone on vacation for a matter of weeks that come home and find their homes burglarized, don't know if anything's been missing. And if there's one thing that can be so terribly frightening and to make you feel victimized more than anything else, maybe somebody entering into your home. And to call police, non-emergency dispatch, or even 911 and be told that quite frankly, is not a priority call for us because we don't know when it happened and there's no suspect there, doesn't feel very good to those that have been victimized. To aggravate that, to not be able to get to you for 6 or 8 hours or ever with a police presence, further victimizes you with that response. And that's of concern to me as well. And so much of that is predicated on our level of resources and our ability to respond to those things. And so through this summer, we've been having those discussions. On the other side of this coin is, if the downtown is going to be a place of commerce and tourism as the economic engine of our city, we are horribly lacking in those resources for those individuals downtown that need a place to be. And what I'm missing is, this is where you can go. So we're missing so many opportunities for day shelter, day resource center, and low barrier housing for people that is a piece of this. Even though you see me standing in this uniform with this badge and this gun and you think police presence, I need you to know that so much of my thought process is around how the other pieces of our system impact my ability to do our job with the available resources that we have, and being comprehensive in that look as opposed to just throwing more police officers at the problem. That's probably part of the solution. We've built a very robust proposal that we're hoping to communicate with City Council this month, and we're excited to do that. But what you'll see about that proposal is that it's very comprehensive. It has pieces of that that address EPD's needs to serve you and to meet the demand with the lack of supply. It has information about our community court and the system and our ability to prosecute cases and have people have entry points into the criminal justice system that don't result in incarceration outcomes. And that there's services that they can take advantage of to be able to elevate themselves to a place of better being and well-being. And we've found that 90% of the people that participate in community court don't reoffend. And so why wouldn't we invest our dollars there? We have money in that system that talks about homelessness and the gaps that we have in trying to provide housing for the unhoused or services for those that don't have homes. And we also have a presence in there that talks about prevention and the amount of money that we need to put at prevention. As you can imagine, as we've had these conversations, the number's overwhelming. The financial commitment to be able to do everything that we need to do is overwhelming. But what we've been doing is being very thoughtful about trying to understand that this is a phased approach to building capacity in our system. Capacity in our system to meet all of the needs. And so you'll be able to have an opportunity to be a part of that and hear about that over the next couple of months. And we're excited about those kinds of conversations that are having, because I believe that moves us forward. As a police department specifically, it is my sincerest hope that we continue to build the relationship with this community that has already been started. This is not a new effort on our part, but it's already been started. But the thing that I will tell you is that the relationship that is built with this community happens with the undedicated time that officers have to be able to be in that relationship. And like in any relationship in your life, it is a two-way street that requires effort and dedication and commitment from both sides. Us coming to you and asking you to be in a relationship with us, but you being willing to accept and want to be in a relationship with your police department. But the key there is that we have to have the undedicated time to do that. 47 minutes of every hour a police officer is on duty, they are responding to calls for service. 47 minutes out of every hour, they're responding to calls for service. 9 minutes of that time, they're doing the administrative functions of their job, which include bathroom breaks, by the way. 4 minutes out of every hour is the amount of time that a police officer has to be in relationship with you, unless you've been a victim of a crime and we're servicing your call. Think about how nice it would be for your police department to have the ability to have the undedicated time to stop by the HOA meeting and just say hi, drop into the businesses and say hi, how are things going? Stop on the sidewalk or on the side of the street when the young boys and girls are playing and just engage in conversation with them. Right now, we don't have that capacity. We don't have that capacity. That's where relationships are formed. That's where the foundation of community policing occurs. Is right in that time of undedicated time. Think about what you want this police department to be for you. Think about the capacity you want this police department and this community justice system to have to serve your needs. Think about the things that you want this police department to grow up to be when we're fully grown up. We're the second largest city in the state of Oregon, depending on who you talk to. I'm going with the Portland State University population study that's going to put us number two. The key is how do we act like the second largest city in the state of Oregon? And how do we act like the second largest police department in the state of Oregon with the capacity to meet your needs, to do the special things we should be doing around meeting the calls for service demand, shortening the response times, being able to handle our opioid crisis, being able to handle and get in front of any of the gang issues that we see, and maybe downstream, maybe more importantly, putting together efforts around the protection of our kids that are being enticed online and the production and delivery of child pornography. So many things that we can do together. So with that, I'm sure that there are a ton of questions that we're going to want to try and answer for you. So again, thank you very much for inviting me, and have a wonderful weekend.
And the first question will be by Sabrina Parsons, who is the CEO of Palo Alto Software. And Palo Alto Software is right downtown at Broadway and Willamette.
Thank you, Joel, and thank you for having me here. Being a business downtown, downtown safety is very important, and we have a whole bunch of our employees in the back here because it's very important to them. We spend a lot of time downtown. Probably I spend more time downtown than at my house because that's where we work. We're in the fourth and fifth floor in that building where Sizzle Pie is. And downtown safety is a big concern for me as a business owner. I worry every day about my employees and can they safely walk from the garage to our office. I hate it in the winter when I see on our internal messaging, you know, come 5, 5:30, 6 o'clock that our employees are reaching out to each other. Who's walking to the garage? Can we walk together? I feel like they shouldn't have to do that. We should be able to have people walk two blocks downtown, even if it's dark, and not feel afraid. But I also recognize the resource issues, and I think Brittany made a really good point with what do we do about immediate solutions, short-term solutions versus long-term solutions? And Chief Skinner really talked about some of the issues we face with the broader picture. Homelessness is a huge issue in Eugene and in Oregon. I had the opportunity to visit Emerald Village Tiny Houses, and the executive director of that program threw out a stat that was really mind-blowing. If you need a housing, government-supported housing, and you are one or two people, to get that studio apartment is a seven-year wait. That's what we're looking at for people who have a homeless crisis, and there's just nowhere for them to go. 7 years, I mean, that's basically saying we don't have housing for those people. They don't have 7 years. So obviously there's all those issues, but I'm going to ask my question preceded by a short anecdote because I also think it's important to think about perception and actual safety. And it's hard. It's hard for me. Some people may know I'm a very liberal business owner, and sometimes I feel not quite so liberal when I'm dealing with all of these things because I want people to be downtown. I want all kinds of different people downtown. I want people to have rights, but I also think that it's fair as a citizen of Eugene to be safe. I have three kids. Two of them are middle school and now in going high school. And every summer, they do this great program at the Wow Hall. Most of you know where that is, but it is downtown. They do a rock and roll camp there. They love it. One of the things, particularly the middle school kids of that camp love, is that they are allowed to go downtown at lunch, and they're allowed to go out and buy lunch. And so for many of these younger kids in this program, there's about 55 kids for 2 weeks downtown doing this program. It's the first time they've ever had that freedom, and they don't have their, you know, packed lunch that mom or dad has put in their backpack. They get to go out, and they get to buy lunch, and it makes them feel really grown up. And sometimes I think that's why my kids want to do the camp, not because they actually want to do the rock and roll, but that they want to be able to buy a soda and a slice of pizza at Sizzle Pie. So first week of August, my 12-year-old with five friends walks from Wow Hall to Sizzle Pie. They all buy their slices of pizza. They have only 30 minutes, so by the time they walk downtown, they wait in line, they get the pizza. Not all of them finish their pizza, so they're walking back to the Wow Hall, three blocks, and they get accosted, yelled at, threatened to have their pizza taken away, and chased. And that's where I feel like, for me, it was, okay, there's no longer a perception of safety. This is a safety issue. Monday at 12:15, downtown Eugene, and a group of five 12-year-olds, incoming seventh graders. You know, I know we have lots of helicopter parents, but I think 12-year-olds should be able to walk three blocks and buy a slice of pizza at Sizzle Pie. And this is what happened. Now, at the same time, the community rallied. I posted, there is a private Facebook group for downtown employees and people who live there where we share things that are going on. I posted in the group. Everybody rallied. Brittany rallied. She actually contacted downtown police. Everybody came and said, "Well, this is crazy. These 50 kids should be safe." And from Tuesday to Friday, they were. There was increased police doing community policing, not presence in a negative way, but just around talking to people, talking to the kids. The kids didn't have a problem for the rest of the week. But the fact that that happened, the fact that these kids were unsafe, one of the kids the next day, their parents sent them with mace, which is clearly, I mean, a 12-year-old with mace downtown is probably a really bad solution to the problem. So my question is, what is realistic given the resources that is not a short-term fix, where it's not just for 1 week increased presence and everyone in downtown looking out for these kids? How do we actually more immediately come together and actually do something that's sustaining given the situation that we're in?
So, in fairness, I'm one of those helicopter parents. But that's, is this on? Can you hear me? Okay. I'm one of those helicopter parents, but that's based on my perspective and my experiences, right? I mean, let's be honest. I've seen the worst of the worst when it comes to kids. I'm the guy that my 11-year-old son just now gets to go to the bathroom by himself. And so he's super feeling super, super encouraged by that. But my 9-year-old daughter absolutely doesn't. And that's purposeful. That's purposeful. So to each your own. But I think at some point we have this discussion about where that balance is between having a safe downtown and understanding what we've grown into as a downtown and what's achievable and what's not. There's a balance there between that. So I appreciate the story because I do think it tees up a broader conversation about this not just being about police presence. That's not what you want. You don't want a police state downtown with cops on every single corner standing there with their arms crossed with their black latex gloves on because of some of the biohazard issues that they have to deal with. What you want is you want a community that polices itself to the extent, and then you let police officers deal with what you want police officers to deal with, which is life-threatening and life safety issues. So what I love about that story is I love that the piece of how the community kind of rallies around this issue. And I also love the fact that there was a response there and it was a coordinated response and it wasn't just a police response. If you've listened to me talk before, and I'm very delicate about the way I deliver this next message, so please bear with me. But if you've heard me talk before, I talk about what is our responsibility as a community around safety in the downtown core. I've got some really good families that say, "I'm never going downtown again." And I look at them and I say, that's exactly who should be downtown. Step up and come downtown. We're not going to change the face of the downtown until we're a little bit courageous and stepping forward and saying, you know what? I'm going to take the turf back. And I'm going to do that. My family and I get this. I'm a completely different animal. Maybe I'm equipped to deal with things that some of you in this room are not equipped to do. But I take my kids and my wife and we go downtown because I'm going to lead by example and lead from the front and say I'm not going to abandon downtown. That maybe doesn't work for you, and I totally get that based on your unique set of circumstances. But what I will say is that I've seen so much culture change when people are willing to step in, be present, when it's safe to be able to say something when you see something and be able to start moving the needle that direction as opposed to falling back, digging in, protecting the equipment and saying this is a police problem. We're a part of the solution. We are absolutely a part of the solution and we want to be. But we also want to do this as a community and in partnership with you, and part of what you bring to the table is that partnership. Brittany?
Yeah, thank you. So I think Chief Skinner said this to me a couple months ago, and it totally resonated, because as much as people want to paint a picture of what folks who feel unsafe downtown really want, I don't actually believe some of those things, and I know it's not true for myself. I don't want to get rid of people downtown, period. I think the solution is more people downtown. It's more people feeling safe to come downtown, but that means all of us have to change our behavior. It means that we have to stop tolerating behavior that makes other people feel unsafe. I need to change my behavior and be more willing to sort of to own this community and this area in our community. That it's my responsibility also to know, what are the resources for folks? Where can I send somebody who needs help? That's hard. There's a lot of resources and a lot of things that people are confused by, but we can do something. We have these cards that were made up, simple solution, created with a handful of resources on the back of it. If you don't feel comfortable interacting or approaching someone, hand them a card. Say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you money, but here's where you can get some resources. There's one simple solution. It's not going to change the course of that person's life, which is where the investment needs to come in, but we all need to take ownership for it. And so I'm responsible for changing my behaviors. I can't turn away from downtown and decide that I don't want to go there anymore. Obviously, we want you to feel safe, and don't put yourself in a situation where you don't feel safe, but kind of check your own biases at the door a little bit and say, okay, is this me feeling unsafe or uncomfortable, and how do I approach a situation differently? And we also have to stop tolerating folks who are harassing people. That's not okay either. It's not okay for someone to sit and harass somebody and to yell or to chase kids down the street or to take up space in the middle of the sidewalk where people are trying to walk. That also is not okay. Those are behaviors. That person is a person who we should love and support and hopefully get them in a situation where they don't need to be sitting right there. But their behavior, we can hold them accountable for, just as I can be held accountable for my behavior. So I think it is going to take us changing attitudes and behaviors and then putting some resources into long-term solutions.
Okay, thank you. And have a seat. Well, before we take a break so that you can formulate your questions, I wanted to inform you of our gold and in-kind sponsors, Hearing Associates, Dr. Sandy Ibarro, Jerry Detelm, Architect Landscape Architect, Banner Bank, and our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon Academic Extension, KRVM 91.9, Radio, Dot Dotson Photography, Pack Info, and Simplified Computing LLC, and KLCC Radio, who broadcasts this program Monday night at 6:30, 89.7 on your radio dial. While we take 5 minutes to formulate your questions, remember that only members can ask questions. Those of you who are new, you have 5 minutes to sign up and be able to ask a question 5 minutes from now. So take a break, and we'll see you back in about 5 minutes. Thank you.
You're listening to KLCC, informing and inspiring listeners for more than a half century. Broadcasting in HD at KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College.
Welcome back. This is September 7th, 2018 City Club program, Are You Safe Downtown? A community conversation with Eugene Police Chief Chris Skinner and Chamber of Commerce CEO Brittany Quick Warner. Now, questions from the audience.
Hello, my name is Susan Conley. I've been in City Club for 10 years. Thank you both so much for coming. I've owned property downtown for 30 years. I had a business down for 10 years. I've lived down there for 12. I love downtown. I really do. But you know what? Even though I'm a liberal, I don't enjoy it when people are screaming and cursing or laying on the sidewalk or riding their bicycle or riding their skateboard. And I am one of those people who calls them on it every single time. And you can guess what the response is most of the time. It's not pleasant. But I do agree with you, the people have to come downtown and people have to call people on their actions. My question is, one more observation. I've noticed that people who either think downtown's just great as it is or won't come downtown, usually don't go downtown. They usually just avoid it. So, any event, my question is, I've traveled all over Oregon, and I've traveled to Richland, Washington, and I have never seen the groups of homeless and travelers that I have here, and I would like to know if you know why.
So I'm probably not going to be the best person to give you the historical perspective.
Chief, can you stand up so that we can get you?
I'm probably not going to be the best person to give you the historical perspective on our journey from that has taken us to this point, just because I've been here for 5 years and certainly don't have that. There'll be others in this room that will be able to address that. I did get posed with the kind of the chicken and the egg conversation about that. Are our unhoused and travelers here because of the services, or are the services here to meet the needs of our unhoused and traveler population? And I don't know the answer to that. So for the first question, I'm going to be underwhelming with my response, obviously, to your first question, not knowing the history of that. I think that there is, and I've seen this with my family as well, I think that this, and this is why I brought my children to Eugene and why I want to be in Eugene, is because I think this city has a personality of being very inclusive and tolerant. I mean, when you think about diversity, it is not an incredibly diverse community statistically compared to other diverse communities, but it's very diverse in its thought and very, very diverse in its inclusion and tolerance, and I really, really appreciate that, and that's something that I wanted my children to experience. You know, I came from Richland, Washington. It's a much more conservative area. I had my own challenges with that conservative area as well, but I think what's interesting is you can look at a neighboring city that we share an I-5 corridor with, and it feels completely different. And I can't tell you how that occurred. So I apologize for not being able to answer your question specifically about that.
Hello, my name is Jack Rady. I have to leave fairly soon because we're making preparations for my wife's 75th birthday this weekend. But the reason I bring that up is we've lived here for 20 years. And for 14 of those years, she was in downtown 6 days a week at about 6:45 in the morning. And she never had any problems at all. She's not a big woman. But she does something, which is when she sees people on the sidewalk, she looks them in the eye and says, "Good morning, how you doing?" No one's ever yelled at her. I'm not sure why, but I think I have an idea. She has noticed that people who walk through the downtown looking like this, or they tend to get yelled at a certain amount. People very nicely dressed, looking contemptuously towards people they walk past, often draw a reaction. The reaction, we know what's going on. There are people who don't have anywhere to live, and there are people who don't know how to act. My question is for the City Club. The question of downtown Eugene is a good one to discuss, but I was a little startled that the presenters would be the head of the Chamber of Commerce describing the problem, although she did so without a single statistic, so I don't know how big the problem is from her point of view, and the chief of police, who gave a very good presentation, but the fact that the problem was to be posed by the chamber and the solution was to be offered by the chief suggests the forum has already answered the question. It is unsafe downtown, and we need the police to deal with it. We certainly do need the police to deal with some of it, but mental health problems cannot be addressed by the police department, and housing problems cannot be addressed by the police department, as the chief made clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Smith, City Club member. Can both of you advocate at state and federal level for welfare teachers, social workers, mental health. The entire U.S. economy has been broken with no bottom for a dozen years. It isn't just Eugene. Homeless folks are the least safe people in town. On Sunday morning, when I see hundreds of them coming for free breakfast, they're black and blue and scratched and bleeding, and it's just no way to live. Can you advocate? Eugene can't fix it. The county can't fix it. The state has to restore welfare. There's no welfare for adults in the state. The federal government has been sitting on Social Security disability so that there are millions of people waiting for benefits and dying before their benefits come. Can you speak to that? Can you represent our community? Because you know you can't deal with the problems that are being dumped on you.
Thank you. Which one of you wants to respond? I think the question is, can you advocate for that?
My response is yes and. Yes, I think that we can do something here locally, and we have to look at the state level, and we have to look at the federal level. I think I said that in the beginning, there's not a silver bullet. And I think that the more we put the issue on somebody else, the further down the road until something's addressed. So yes, we can, I think, do something at the local level, and we must do something at the state level, and we must advocate at the federal level. The Eugene Chamber is a small nonprofit. We have a tiny staff. We have a small budget. We're working on collective impact. We have the business community who's come together to say, we believe that this community can be the best community in the entire country. It's why they choose to be here, and they're investing their money, and we are working on their behalf to try and make this community a better place. There's not one solution, and there's multiple approaches to solutions. So we're doing the best we can to approach it in the way that we believe that data has driven us, and that research and conversations can. But it's not the only solution. There's plenty of other groups in this community who have been and need to and will continue to step up to help solve this problem with us. But I think that we can do something locally and do something at the state and federal level.
Yeah, there's a lot of advocacy that can occur, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that every city I've ever been a part of, to include this city, generally speaking, has legislative priorities that are important to the city, and they're across the board. And then through that, identifying those legislative priorities, then we throw the resources within the city at trying to advocate for those things at various levels with your elected officials. And so as your police chief, it is well within my ability to advocate strongly for those types of things, but I'm very quick to understand that sometimes my priorities, oftentimes just my priorities, is not the only part of the conversation. That it has to be in alignment with the city's priorities and council's priorities legislatively. And so we wait and take our lead from the city leaders and our elected officials locally to identify, you know, what grant dollars we go after, what advocacy needs to happen at the state, local, state, and or federal level. And so we wait and take those cues, but fully prepared to engage where ethically I can engage, and have done that in the past.
We have a number of people that want to ask questions. I'd ask that your questions be short and to the point.
Now, why are you bringing that up with me, Joel?
I'm bringing just a coincidence, Jack.
Yeah, okay. I want to strongly reinforce the last two questions. I thought they were excellent questions. And I think there are answers that the city is not really looking at, frankly. But I want to move on to one other issue, which I'm concerned about, which is the proposed surveillance cameras. And the security I'm concerned about personally is security for my seditious conversations in public. Okay. Those cameras are supposed to be about 35 feet high, which take in a very large area. They have audio. I want to know how sensitive that audio is. I want to know if these videos are preserved, where they're preserved, who has access to those videos. Are they potentially shared with Homeland Security federal agencies. I want to know how secure our private conversations are in public space.
So there's no plan to record conversations with these cameras. This is video only for behaviors that we exhibit. So that is not part of the game plan is to be recording private conversations. Those I understand your concern around that, and that has never been part of the discussion. Is to do that is the first thing I'll tell you. The second thing I'll tell you is that you just heard me talk about the challenges that we have with resources and being able to be eyes through a variety of areas and how thin we're spread. The video surveillance platform or the video technology that we're designed to use is a force multiplier for us, so that we have the ability to keep an eye on particular areas. And it's not just about downtown. That's one of the things. This, the genesis of the conversation was about downtown, but I need to let you know that my vision for what we have is also, don't be shocked if you don't see one of these things in the Target parking lot or Walmart parking lot after we've gotten a report of a half a dozen car prowls and shoplifting. I mean, there's an application for these all over. And then I would also mention to you that cameras are everywhere. Cameras are everywhere. We have put cameras on every single one of our police officers, and we seem to be okay with capturing people saying and doing things in their most private of areas at their most vulnerable times. And the cameras that I'm proposing are much more broadly and not specifically used to capture areas of concerning that may be of concern and behavior. As we march towards 2021, and as we see the ability to put Eugene on the map and be in front of the world and evaluated on a world stage about the awesome community we have, there are some safety features to having this type of technology in our toolkit that I think really, really place us in great advantage. So these were never intended to violate anybody's privacy, never intended to record your conversation, more intended to be a separate set of high view eyes for us, for our police officers downtown and throughout the community.
Steve?
Steve Robinson, Charter City Club member. I really appreciate your presentations today. You've obviously thought very, very deeply about these issues. And I got the sense from your presentation, Chief, that you have a pretty good idea of what best practices are given the resources to carry them out. You mentioned several examples of programs that you would like to see available in the community, and you probably have 10 others that you'd like to see implemented. The question is whether you're aware of any best practices in other cities that have addressed this problem successfully that would deal with the two things that I heard you talk about that we're needing, which one is getting more resources so that some of those best practices could be implemented programmatically. And Brittany, what you were talking about in terms of changing some attitudes in the community, are there communities that you know of that have addressed that issue and gotten the broader community to act in ways that are more conducive to downtown safety?
So the first question was around identifying ways to get more resources. We are working towards trying to present council with some options to be able to do that. That's a work in progress right now, and so I don't have, obviously I've not been able to pull the curtain back and see everything that's going on at the city manager's office, but I know that there's some thoughtful conversation about doing that. And to your point, yeah, I've got about 10,000 things I want to do with this police department. What you didn't know is you hired a very right-brained police chief who is not short of ideas. And so sometimes it's frustrating for me to not get to where I want to go sooner. The one thing I will tell you from a resource perspective is that, again, I can't iterate enough. This isn't completely about me getting more police officers. I need shelter space. And I need low barrier overnight space. If you want me to do my job better, and you want our police officers to stay focused on what they should be focusing on, which is life safety and serious critical events in your community, and trust me, there's plenty of them, I need shelter space and I need low barrier space.
Bob, make it quick, please. Quick question, quick answer. This is the last question.
Don't hold me up. Bob Cassidy, City Club member. Chief, I'd like the position that both of you took, that it was a matter of perception as opposed to actuality of problems. We've heard about a few of the problems, our president's wife having a swing at her, the kids being accosted. What is the record that the police have, not just the statistics, but the types of things that they have either arrested for or stopped or prevented? What has been going on? What is the improvement so that people who just have the perception will have a better idea of what's going on?
All right, that's a speed round. So if you've spent time downtown, you've seen a variety of things that we've tried to do this summer in a response to this. You've seen more police presence and more dedicated presence. You've seen more park ambassadors. You've seen the red caps running around doing their thing. You've seen a new contract with ASI Security to be able to do that. But the key is, this summer, maybe more than any other summer, and I don't know if I can validate that since I've only been here one summer, is the way that they're working together, as opposed to doing their own thing and satellite operations, having their own conversations. One of our collective things that we wanted to do is they all have the same radios now. We're all having the same conversations now, so that we don't have a red cap that has dealt with somebody over and over and over again, and now here comes a police officer and doesn't know that the red cap just dealt with somebody, and now we're dealing with somebody all over again. A lack of redundancy is what we're trying to move towards, and a little bit more of a coordinated effort downtown. And so that stuff that you don't see, that stuff that happens behind the scenes, but that's an efficiency that we need to take advantage of. Because if you think about the number of bodies downtown that are focused on your safety and security, there's a ton of people there. It's how we leverage that collective.
Excuse me, Chief. I'm going to have to interrupt you right now. We're out of time. I thank everybody for their thoughtful questions and the thoughtful answers. Next week, we begin a series of 6 programs dealing with ballot measures, county, state, and municipal, county, state, and national offices being contested in the November election. Check cityclubofeugene.org for more information about these important programs. It's also on your table flyers. Next week, we have arguments for and against ballot measure 105, the attempt to repeal the 30-year-old sanctuary law in the state of New Jersey, a state of old habits die hard, the state of Oregon, with Speaker Jim Ludwig of Oregon for Immigration Reform in favor of repeal, and Raina Lopez, PCU, Oregon's Farm Workers and Tree Planters Union, speaking against. More details, cityclubofeugene.org. Now let's thank our speakers, Chief Skinner, Brittany Quick-Warner, and Sabrina Parsons. Thank you, and the membership tables are still open for those of you that are not yet members. This concludes today's program. Thank you.